Welcome to Sensate. I'm Haruna. I'm joined again by my co-host,
Hermelaine.
How's the weather? I know I said I wasn't going to ask you, but
great question. Anyway. The weather is like you cannot say anything about it. It's like this weather that's very usual, gray, bit cold. Nothing to say about.
Nothing to say about it. Okay. Well, today in the States, it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day. So I think most people are off today. It's a national holiday, so most people are off. So it just happens to be a day when we have a really important guest. Okay. Fitness instructor, fitness professional, soul cycle instructor, mom of a one-year-old baby boy, Allison Santini.
What's up, Hi. Allison? Thanks for having me on.
So how are you?
I'm good. Just hanging out. It's my last day of no work. So tomorrow I'm back to work. So I'm just trying to get like last minute things done so that I can have a smooth transition back into working mama.
Working mama.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
So why is it your last day of no work? What's been going on?
So yeah, I actually got COVID. So I guess 10 days I quarantined. And then after the 10th day, they say you can leave quarantine. But I couldn't go back to work for 14 days. So today is like day 14. And then tomorrow I can teach my first class back at Soul Cycle, which will be nice. I'm like missing the energy of it and the people and all the good vibes that I get from it. So I'm excited.
It sounds exciting. It sounds horrible that you had COVID though.
How was yeah. that? It was, you know, I have to say it wasn't, thankfully my case was not as bad as I'm sure some other people's. I really just had a bad headache for like a day or two and like a runny nose. It was like very sinusy, and that's kind of actually how I knew something was off in my body, because I don't usually get headaches like that. So I went and got tested first thing in the morning that I felt I woke up with a headache, and sure enough it came back positive for COVID. So but the silver lining is now I have antibodies, so I don't have to worry about it for a little while, you know.
That's great. And I'm sorry that you had that. I know a lot of people have had it. My nephew had it, my uncle, mm-hmm. my auntie, and my brother as well. So
I still don't have my taste or smell, which is a very thing. It comes back like gradually. So we'll see.
Yeah, hopefully. Because here in the Netherlands, we already have like courses or workshops where you can, they teach you how to
really
smell again, yeah, and taste again.
So interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah. So it can take a while.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
How do you learn how to smell?
I don't know. I was wondering the same thing, but no, I don't know. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I know people were sending me like all of these like tips on how to get your taste back. Like I was drinking hot water with cayenne pepper and lemon.
Oh yeah.
Someone else sent me like a TikTok thing where you like char an orange and then like mash brown sugar. But I don't know. None of it worked for me. So I'm like, I guess I'll just be patient and wait for it to come back.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you for joining the show. I've wanted you to be a guest for a while. You and I have met about 2016, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I rode in your class and I really connected with, you know, a few of you. You know, mm-hmm. I love all of the instructors at SoulCycle. And I connected with your class because there was a deeper spiritual piece
mm-hmm.
than in some of the other classes.
Mm-hmm.
So could you tell us about that? What's your spiritual?
Yeah. You know, I always feel like I've been like a spiritual person, but I feel like as I've been through things in life, I've opens my spiritual, like taking it to like another level. And I feel like now I'm just, I love to infuse everything I do in life with that, because I really do feel like everything is interconnected. So whether I'm teaching a soul cycle class or, you know, doing anything else that I really do, I love to really stay connected to my spirit and just like encourage other people to get in touch with theirs, you know, like not so much me imposing my beliefs on people, but just kind of like opening people's minds and opening people's hearts and just like getting them curious about how they can better connect with their spirit. So that's something that I like to bring to SoulCycle, because I do feel like there is just like an energy in there that we generate. And I really like to kind of give that energy a direction for people. So it doesn't just become a fitness class. It becomes more of like an experience where you can just connect to yourself on a deeper level, whether that be that you need healing that day or inspiration that day. Like, it's just so much more than like getting a sweat in 45 minutes.
Hermelaine has never done SoulCycle.
Oh, no. I feel like you would love it.
No, are you on a bike? Is it on a yes. bike? Yeah. Okay. So you're spinning mm-hmm. and then spinning with a spiritual component.
Yeah. So we ride to the beat of the music. Yeah. So us instructors make playlists. And that's kind of where I feel this powerful energy is generated, is everyone's riding to the beat of the music. So it's almost like the unison of it. It just kind of like puts like these pulses out into the room that like unites everybody, but also like, it's just a very, I don't know. There's no real words to describe the energy that we create in there. Right, Haruna? Like, it's something you just have to experience, I think, you know?
Yeah. So, but I like the idea that you direct the energy. Yeah. So you have like an intention or a focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And is that then a group intention or more like a personal one?
Well, I would say that I always kind of encourage people like to set an intention for class, or set an intention you can come back to when class gets challenging, or, you know, like if there's something you feel like you need to move through today, then like, bring that to the bike, you know, so that we can really use our bodies to move through it. So I feel like everyone might have their own individual intention, but we work together as a class to kind of like move through it all.
Yeah. And can you also then feel when the energy, you know, sort of gets stuck or is really difficult to move?
Yeah. And I feel like, again, there's this element, I think maybe because we are moving in unison, that it almost feels like we can move mountains together. Like it's almost like this unsaid thing that everyone in the room feels like they're just like not alone, you know, like it's almost like a very teamwork driven feeling. So it's really beautiful.
Yeah. And what do you get back, like results from these intentions?
Physical or?
No, whatever. Or, yeah, whatever.
I feel like things that I have put out into the room, even just like in my own mental, without even saying it out loud, like I've seen lots of it come to fruition. I've had a lot of riders over the years, because I've been doing this for so long, come up to me and just say like how, you know, something they thought about in class or whatever, maybe even just talking to me before class or after class, like the energy of the room kind of like helped spark it into motion. Like, you know, I've you know, heard lots of stories over the years of just how that room has really helped people heal or manifest, or, you know, it's just like a force.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I do a little bit of the same thing, but then not, I mean, online, so it's different, yeah. But yeah. In group sessions with meditation, mm-hmm. and we connect to each other and to the energy and the group energy, so we can really work with the power of that and to set intentions and go deep and go through it and then let go of anything that's stuck or
No, I love that.
Yeah, and I think it's really, you know, in this time it goes so quickly with a group of people to work on your intentions and to build energy and move through things. I think it's really nice to
there's something so magical about when everyone can come together and they're just willing to contribute their molecules of energy. And I feel like everyone kind of you know, it's like this back and forth, like, that just becomes like a benefit for everybody, you know. It's really awesome.
Cool. Yeah. So where do you come from that you started to do this? Because I have understood that you were struggling with your energy.
Yeah. So, well, actually, I got into SoulCycle. I went to college for health sciences. I have my like personal trainer certification. So for me, I would say when I first started teaching 6 or 7 years ago, it was basically more fitness. My purpose was more fitness driven. And then I got to a point of teaching so many classes week after week that I did go through like a period of burnout, and that was kind of a catalyst for me to look inward and find healing, not just for my body, but also to kind of deconstruct these different beliefs I had about how I needed to be working hard all the time. And if I wasn't working hard, then I wasn't being productive, or, you know, just things that I had picked up in childhood and stuff like that. So once that burnout period hit for me, then I feel like I kind of went through this spiritual awakening that took me as a person, but also my class, to a different level in terms of, okay, now how can I take all of that and now incorporate it into my classes? Because like, that's who I am now, you know, and that's a big part of me. So I always like to try and keep my classes an authentic reflection of like who I am as a person and what I'm going through, because I always feel like there's someone else out there that needs to hear things that I needed to hear, you know?
Yeah. I think that's also beautiful about this time, that, you know, we need to be really authentic, and that's what activates a certain type of energy in others.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So that's really like the invitation for me in this time, to be totally authentic, so that you, well, you mirror something and somebody else can be their own being.
Yeah, for sure.
So what we know, Hermelaine and I trained at the Barbara Brennan School of Healing. I was actually her teacher back in Europe, back a while ago.
A long time ago.
You're laughing.
A long time ago, like 15 years.
Oh, wow.
Holy shit. Okay. So we know that most people who find spirituality or find energy work have had difficulty in their childhood, things that they've had to face and overcome. Do you have anything in your background that you'd like to share that led you to?
You know, I wouldn't say that I had anything that was like super traumatizing, but as I kind of got into doing my healing work and just like taking a deeper look into myself and my past and things like that, I would say that I guess maybe the biggest thing from my childhood that I kind of had to unlearn certain elements from was I was a competitive figure skater all my life. My dad actually owns an ice rink. So I don't know if you know much about figure skating, but it's a very like disciplined individual sport. So it's not like you're on a team or anything. It's you, and there's just a lot of pressure and just like competition, not even with like the other girls, but like with yourself, this like push to just like be perfect, you know? So I feel like as, like I said, I feel like as kind of I started to awaken, I started to become aware of how those, you know, thoughts and beliefs I was kind of imposing on myself without even realizing it. And they were kind of becoming draining, you know, to my system. It's very, I feel like when we put those expectations on ourselves all the time, it's like, it really just like sucks the life out of you, especially I'm an empath. So I am like easily drained. to begin with, but like to then have that extra pressure on myself all the time to be perfect, to do things perfectly, to always be working 110%. I realized after the fact how much of that came from my competitive figure skating for so long. I mean, I did it till I was, I think 16, 17, 18 years old to like my senior year of high school. So, but I'm talking from like when I was 5 years old to then. So, you know, those just like those repetitive thoughts and all those things for all those years kind of became ingrained in me. So I took them with me into my adult life and I got so many positive things out of being a figure skater, but I realized that there were some things that I kept with me that just didn't serve me in a positive way. So I feel like if there was one thing that kind of molded me in a certain way, it was probably just the fact that I was in that environment, in that mindset for all those years.
Yeah. And what does that do to your body or to your cells? Or can you say something about that?
Yeah. So actually, when I first got Reiki done on me, this is around the time that I kind of was just like opening myself up to like this spiritual awakening and figuring out like why I was so drained and stuff. And I came to learn or understand through my first Reiki experience that I was actually, my body was holding on to a lot of those experiences of, you know, like getting so mad at myself for like losing competitions and, you know, all of that failure and rejection, like was all being stored in my body. And, you know, it would manifest for me as like aches and pains in my shoulders or different places of my body that I was thinking was obviously maybe just a physical thing. And now and at that point, when I got that first Reiki session, I started to realize like, wow, you know, the body holds on to memories and traumas so much longer than our mind even remembers, you know, like sometimes I feel like there's this, this coping mechanism that the mind does that it just like forgets certain things and it just shoves it down into the cells of our bodies. And so Reiki for me was a really powerful way to kind of like bring some of that up. And I liked to cry it out of my body. So anytime I would cry, it would be like this beautiful release. And then I would wake up the next morning and I would just feel lighter, you know, like less aches and pains and just physically lighter, you know, in my shoulders and my legs. So yeah, that was one way that I feel like all of that junk was kind of like in my body. It was fascinating when I started to realize that there was such a connection there.
And like other impacts, like emotional, I mean, you said you cried, but you cried it out of your body, but I can, I can imagine that, you know, also emotionally you have to, well, when you go through this training that you have to keep a lot down or are not allowed to feel a lot, maybe.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I love my parents are like literally the best people ever. And my mom is a little more, I would say, empathetic. She's kind of more like who I've become in my adult life. But my dad, again, great guy. I'm so grateful that he's my dad. But it's how he grew up was like, you know, very stern and it's hustle, you know, and yeah, I think that serves you sometimes, but I feel like that was something that I kind of took on as my own. And he is very much not like, don't cry, you know, like don't show emotion. Everything is fine. You're fine, you know? And so like, so I had to kind of like reparent myself in a way to remind myself like, no, you're safe to feel things. You're safe to show emotion. Like crying is not a bad thing. Like crying is a beautiful self-care tool to pull out of your toolkit when you feel like you need to just kind of like process things.
Yeah.
Was there any particular place in your body that held more trauma or energy?
Specifically my shoulders. It was like, I can tell a difference in how I look. Like if I look at pictures of me, like when I first started teaching or that first year, year and a half, before I started kind of like taking the deep dive and doing the work, like my shoulders, just like my traps specifically, like they just look more like hunched, you know? And it was almost like the weight of the world and the weight of my past was just like sitting on my shoulders. Now add in that I'm riding a bike hunched over 12, 13, 14 times a week with one day off. And that repetitive. So again, there was a physical aspect, yes, but I feel like even more so, it was like that emotional aspect of like, look, I'm protecting my heart. I'm not going to show you what I'm feeling. Like everything is closed in here. And breath work is something also that kind of also something that helped open me up. And I was realizing even in class, I was teaching from my voice from here up, you know, and I had to learn how to breathe fully and project from my gut, you know, but that is all things that happened once I started to reopen and release things that were kind of like keeping me heavy and hunched over in my upper body. So it was a process, but yeah, I would say for sure my shoulders were the biggest point of just like heaviness and achiness for me.
Yeah. So you were talking about burnout, and I think that's it's a big problem for younger people also. And why is it that so many young people also have burnouts already?
You know, I feel like there is this trending thing, like team no sleep. You know, like there's this pride associated with working until like you can no longer function. I don't know. I feel like most people, and I feel like it's people are waking up to the fact that rest is important. I feel and sleep is important, but and I feel like that's a new thing. But I do feel like there was this element of like, you know, you have to hustle until you get what you want. And, you know, like there's no time for sleep, no time for rest. Like, and I don't know if that's something that, cause I feel like it is my generation, like kind of reinforces that. And I feel like that's kind of similar to what I feel like I experienced, from my elders, like when I was growing up, like, I feel like maybe that's like what a lot of people in my generation experienced. So they think that that has to also be their reality. But yeah, I feel like burnout is this terrible thing that's been like normalized in a lot of ways. And I feel as the world continues to wake up, that's like a stigma that we are going to slowly like dismantle. I feel like a lot of people now are aware of how important self-care is and pacing yourself and being willing to slow down and feel good, you know, like I think we forget that feeling good is our birthright. We're not supposed to have to rely on coffee all the time and stuff like that, you know? So, yeah, I feel like hopefully as the world continues to wake up, that's something that maybe we can break and just like evolve from, you know?
Yeah. I feel that there's like this difference between the masculine energy and the feminine energy, and that mm-hmm. we've been programmed for a lot of time to be mm-hmm. in the masculine. And yeah. that we, I mean, I hear, even hear you say it, like, we know how important rest is, but, you know, rest and getting into the body and slow down is mm-hmm. basically the way to connect to your feminine energy. And yeah. from there, the manifestation process becomes much more effortless.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
you should be diving in there more to be even, you know.
Yeah. I actually read this quote recently, which I was like, wow, that's such a beautiful way to put it. It's kind of to your point of how you can manifest with so much more ease if you just do your healing work, you know, and release these blocks that you're holding in your body or your energy fields. And then things can just come in. You don't have to go and run around a million times to get them to come to fruition. Like it'll happen more organically and with a lot less force and effort if you you know, use that healing work, that feminine energy, you know, and it's exactly what you're saying is like healing is the new manifestation.
Yeah. And that also the healing makes space for the rest to, you know,
come in.
To come in. Before, if you're really tight, if your body is really tight and very blocked, you don't have any space for, you know, the light or the potential that you have to come in.
Totally.
So, yeah. So you have to soften in a way.
Yeah. You have
to soften to open. And that these are all feminine qualities, like to open and surrender and soften.
Yep. I love it.
And slow down and rest and everything.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Haruna?
Oh, you're
here. Haruna's like, retweet.
And I completely understand and can relate to the whole competition thing, and how you can force yourself to believe the messages one all around you. Because when I was competing in martial arts, I would get psyched out. I'd have butterflies. I would freak out if I didn't do well. When I saw certain people competing against me, I would say, oh shit, well, I'm not going to win today. Mm-hmm. And completely start to shut down, get frustrated in the very beginning. Once I started to recognize what was going on in my body, the fear, and set my intention to be present and let go of any expectation, things started to change. Okay, I started winning more. I started really appreciating other competitors for what they brought. And then my relationships with the other competitors started to change. Okay, we began to have open dialogue. They would come to me and tell me things that they really liked about my performances. They would tell me things that they recommended I work on to improve. Did any of that happen for you when you were competing?
You know, I really feel like figure skating is so savage that literally like no one. Okay, so, well, it was like you were kind of friends with people at the rink you trained at. But as far as competitions, it was people from all over. So, yes, I would see some of the same people at, a, you know, any given competition. But I feel like it was more so like everyone was from all over. So especially in a competition setting, it's just like no one talked to anyone. Like it was like you and your coach and that's it, you know? So, and actually when I was in high school, my friends made me start to play basketball because I was tall. And I remember one of the first things I thought was, oh my God, like this is incredible. Like I'm on a team of people and we are competing against the other teams. But, you know, you had that support system of like, yeah, if you messed up, you had people that had your back and you could cheer other people on. It wasn't like everyone was like going at each other's throats and it was like every man for themselves. And so I feel like when I started playing basketball a little later in high school, like that was something I immediately appreciated about it because figure skating was so like, you just don't talk to anyone, you know? And it was just crazy looking back on it, you know, it was really like a stressful environment.
Yeah. So I can imagine that you also had to deal then with the loneliness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also for me, another thing was I always felt very different because I was always the tallest. So a lot of figure skaters are very short. And, you know, tiny. And I mean, I was always pretty thin naturally, but I was just so tall. And that was so not common in figure skating. So I always felt super insecure too about how I measured up to other people in that way as well, because I always felt like everyone was looking at me extra because I was like so tall and it was just like so abnormal. So that was like another thing too, just like appearance wise that I kind of felt even more alone about because I was like, oh my God, I stick out like a sore thumb. And when I was that little, like I didn't really like to have attention on me. And so like being so tall, like just made everything like 1,000 times harder for me. Like, I almost feel like I even developed social anxiety at one point in my childhood because I was just like, I don't want anyone to look at me, you know?
So how did you heal that, or what did you do?
You know, I feel like that's even something that I didn't realize was in my system until I got older. I would say, like, in college, I started to just, like, embrace how tall I was because I was actually hanging out with, like, taller people. Like, I was friends with the girls and boys basketball team at my college. So naturally they were very tall, and I lived with a bunch of basketball players. So that's kind of like a point in my life where I was just like, oh, okay. Like, being tall is cool. Like, I can accept this now, you know, but you know, as I got into my healing work later on, I really realized how growing up being tall really affected me, you know, and it wasn't until college that I could really come out of my shell. And when I started to do inner child healing work, that's one thing that I kind of worked on my inner child with. It is just like, you know, you're beautiful and, you know, you're tall, and it brings a unique quality in your appearance. Like, I had to really just kind of like show love to that younger girl that always just like feared that people would think I was like weird for being so tall and just different.
Yeah, you were talking about being different. Is that only because of being tall or something else too? Because I can totally relate to that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people that don't feel they belong.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like I'm like 50% introverted, 50% extroverted. So I always went back and forth between like, I just want to be to myself and like, but then also kind of wanting to be around people. So like, there was always this kind of like internal tug of war with me, but also I would say I wasn't sure because I always felt like I was too smart for the cool kids, but I was too cool for the smart kids. Does that make sense? Like, so I felt like I couldn't fully commit to the cool kids because they were into things that I was just like, oh no, you know, like that's not for me. But like, I wasn't a total nerd, you know, like I felt like I couldn't really commit. So I always was just kind of like this like floater. I didn't really have like a set group of friends. I was just kind of like a floater that was friends with everybody, but I never really attached myself to anybody else or any group because I just felt like different, you know.
And how is it now? Can you attach or
no still? I don't like to attach to things or people, honestly. I'm just like a very independent person, and I do have like very eclectic beliefs and tastes, so I kind of just, I feel like it's also that I can find something to appreciate in every person. So it's not that I dislike people or things. It's just like I find something to vibe with, but then like I like to stay in my own vibe, you know, like I can vibe with people, but I'm not gonna like get so attached to them that I like become them, you know. Does that make sense?
You're okay. preaching to the choir.
Good. I'm glad you understand what I'm trying to say. Yeah,
you're speaking my language. So building community and having different relationships is really essential to your development. And what you said is your relationship to people and sports changed once you started playing basketball. My belief is that every person
I agree.
Okay. So, but a lot of parents don't want that. You know, gymnastics is a very individualistic sport. Figure skating, martial arts, for the most part, is very individual. But basketball, football, I've never stepped back from the football conversation because I have my certain beliefs. Not your
football. Okay, good. I love it.
Soccer. But I think that the team concept is really important, especially in today. But with everything going on with lockdown and COVID, team sports have kind of taken a step back, and socialization is suffering, I believe. So how is it for you having a baby and having to be locked down?
It's so interesting that you bring that up, because me and Adrian were actually just talking last night about, like, okay, he's 1 year old now. Like, are we going to send him to daycare? And it's just so hard to plan right now because of the state of the world. But also it's very hard to be a parent, because it's almost like sometimes you just feel like you're between a rock and a hard place, you know? Like, of course I want Ace to be socializing with all, you know, kids his age and stuff like that. But also there's this like element of like, okay, but what am I exposing him to, you know? So actually me and Rachel went for a walk. You know, Rachel has Charlie, her son. They're pretty close in age. They're like 7 months apart or something. Yeah.
So, let's pause for a second so Hermione can catch up.
Yes.
Yes.
So, Ace is her son.
Yes.
He's got a badass name. Okay.
Yes.
And Rachel is.
And she had a baby as well shortly after me. And his name is Charlie. So, yeah. So we went for a walk, a socially distanced walk around my neighborhood, which is pretty quiet, actually, a couple months ago. But yeah, I mean, I was just saying to Adrian last night, like, I feel like every day I have to at least take Ace for a walk, you know, somewhere so he can, like, see things. And for me, it's heartbreaking that he has to see people in a mask, you know, because he's literally only seeing people's eyes and no mouth. I mean, even when I put a mask on, like when we leave our home, he'll look at me like, Mom, what are you doing? You know, like he's just like, why is your face covered? And I feel like I'm grateful that he is so young. But for some of these kids that, I don't know, are like 5 or 6, like, I feel like I feel bad how that might affect their psyche, like later on in life, that this has gone on for so long. So yeah, as a parent, it's hard because it's like, you obviously want to make the best decision for your child, but it's like, what is the best decision, you know? So yeah, that's kind of where we're at. Like me and Adrian have just been having open conversations about how we feel about sending him to daycare. Obviously we want to send him to preschool, and I'm hoping that this will all be over by then. But in terms of daycare, because he is old enough now, we're waiting now, like holding off now until these numbers start to go down or just like things start to dissipate, especially because I just had it. It's like very close to home right now. Thankfully Adrian and Ace did not get it. I'm so grateful for that. But yeah, it's definitely hard to be a parent these days with the decision making, you know?
Yeah. And you haven't seen him then for 14 days?
No. So, I mean, we live in a 2-bedroom apartment. So okay. After the 10th day, I was more like whatever with him, but the first 10 days I was trying my best to, you know, just like stay away from him more than I normally would and things like that. And yeah, thankfully him and Adrian stayed healthy. So I was like, yes.
But you also said he isn't exposed to other things. So
yeah.
There might also be benefits.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's hard too, because it's like, you want to keep them safe, but how long can you keep them in a bubble for, you know? Yeah. So that's really the, like, for me, like the push and pull is like, all right, we can't lock him up forever, you know? So that's why, like I said, I try to at least take him for walks, even just like go to the coffee shop so he can see people. And, you know, we even have a bunch of babies in our building that when we're going in and out, he can at least see or whatever, and we'll stop and chat. But as far as just like, I wish I could bring him somewhere that like he could just socialize with other kids his age, just to like get him used to experiencing just other his peers, you know. But hopefully this will die down within the next few months so we can branch out a little bit more, you know, for his sake.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I could tell that there was some emotion coming up when you said your heart was broken or heart was breaking. Not being able to connect him with stuff.
Yeah. And even just like going for a walk, we're right by the water. So you can just tell like he's just like in awe of like everything when we bring him outside. And I'm just like, okay, this is what he needs to be stimulated in this way, you know? So I try just once a day, even if it's just for like whatever, a lap around the block, whatever, just so he can see different things and people, you know.
Yeah, that's also when they are so small, you know, Everything is new. So It doesn't really matter.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Like a flower is new. When,
exactly. Yeah. All the little things.
Yeah.
So what's that like for you, being on lockdown or having been on lockdown? Usually there's a lot of support. Yeah. From other people.
Yeah.
It was
kind of weird because I gave birth the 28th of 2019, and then I was on maternity leave for 6 weeks, and then I went back to work for I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks, and then lockdown hit. So which then when I went back into lockdown, I was actually, a part of me was grateful because I felt like I got this like extended maternity leave time. Which we got to spend for most of 2020. Me and Adrian got to spend that much more time with Ace that we honestly would not have been able to had we both had those full schedules. You know, I have to say, it's very funny that people always tell you when you're pregnant, like, I'm here, like, it takes a village. Like, if you ever need anything, like, call on me. And not that I felt unsupported in any way, but I did feel like, I don't know, like I feel like people say that. And then like when there are times when like you actually need some support, like magically everyone is busy, you know, which like I get it. Like I don't take it personally because everyone has their own lives, their own kids, their own responsibilities. But it's just, I noticed that so many people are so eager to tell you like they're here for you and that they're offering help. They'll offer help or they'll be there to help you. But I just also bear in mind, me and Adrian don't have any family down here. So it's literally just him and I. Our families both live in New York. So it wasn't like that family wasn't there for us. We have very supportive families. For us, like we really had to like scramble to find like babysitters and stuff what that 2 or 3 weeks that we were both at work before lockdown hit. And I had people there for me via like text and phone calls, but when it came time to like, hey, like emergency, like is there any way you can come over and watch Ace for 2 or 3 hours, like I'll pay you whatever, like I didn't feel like most of the people that told me like that they would be there for me actually like followed through with that. So that was something that I was like, oh, okay, like that's interesting. But I've actually heard that from a couple people that like, you know, like I guess when it comes down to walking your talk in that way, like I guess some people just, I don't know, people are busy with their own lives. So I guess that's why, again, I don't like like to attach to people or rely on things, but it was just like more of like an observation that I made.
Yeah. Yeah, so motherhood can be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it really is. And I think we are not being very open about it.
Yeah.
Not yeah. Open enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I remember that also from being a young mother.
Yeah.
I mean, having no like, sleep.
Yeah.
Really needed to sleep and nobody there to.
Yeah. You know. That, and it's just like your hormones are all over the place, you know, from giving birth. It's like, I remember anytime I would breastfeed, I would just like start crying and Adrian would be like, what's wrong? And I'm like, I don't know. I just need to cry. Like my hormones were, and I'm sure you probably felt it, like they're just all over the place. They take so long to stabilize. So I really also had to give myself so much grace for just the process, the postpartum process. And the fact that, like I said, me and Adrian were doing this thing pretty much alone. Like my mom came for the first week that I had him. She came down with my dad and my sister, which was nice to kind of like transition into like, okay, how am I going to actually do this mom thing? Like her support was like, I was so grateful for. But then like after that, it was pretty much like, all right, let's do it. Like, let's figure it out, you know? So it's like this emotional roller coaster of emotions and hormones and all of the things just trying to figure it out, you know?
But don't you think lockdown then is also a blessing in disguise?
Oh yeah, 1,000% I
For
feel.
young mothers, and
Yes.
I mean that you have to go back to work in 6 weeks. I mean, that's also insane if you think about
Insane.
it, when your hormones are like that, and your body hasn't recovered yet. And
Yeah.
I see it also here. I mean, 6 weeks is quicker than in the Netherlands. We have like 3 months, I guess.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah.
That's beautiful, but that's also way too quick. I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
I think we need like, at least 6 months or a year to
At
recover
least.
and to sink back into your body and to heal from the hard
Yeah, and
wounds.
especially because when I came back, I was teaching a full schedule of my classes. And what I do is so physical that, like, I remember just not getting sleep for just that 3 weeks. It was like I wasn't getting sleep. I was powering through these classes. My body was like still trying to figure out like what's happening, you know? And yeah, 6 weeks was so quick. And like you said, me and Adrian were like, wow, like lockdown for us was such a blessing because I was like, okay, whoa, like I can slow down and really just like give myself grace with this whole thing as like I try and get my equilibrium back. Like I didn't even remember what it felt like to be not pregnant or, you know. So I would say honestly, not until I was 8 months, maybe 9 months postpartum, did I fully feel like myself again. You know, and so to your point of maternity leave, like, yeah, I would say think about how long it took to make the baby, and that's about the time you probably need to recover fully, you know?
Yeah, I think I needed like 4 years. I mean,
I
to be, to be really myself. No, not even. I think I felt like she's 9 now. So I felt like 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, that I felt normal again. And I had a, I had a traumatic birth, delivery, everything. So it took me longer.
Yeah, to
But
heal.
it takes a long time, and we haven't built in any time for mothers to recover.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I
And
feel
so
like
the thing we are talking about, the pressure,
yes, exactly.
it's way too high.
Yeah, and I guess again, I feel like it's that is part of what you were saying earlier about the masculine, you know, thinking or masculine energy that society's kind of like saturated with is like, no, you'll be fine. Like, just power through, you know, like bounce back or whatever. Like, we really need to infuse society with more feminine principles, more feminine qualities of just like patience and softness and healing. And I feel like as the world continues to wake up, my hope is that some of that can actually come to fruition.
Yeah, I hope too. Yes, me too. So I can see this also, the state of the world also see us like a reset. We have to reset, because if not, we damage everything there is left. Like our bodies and our children and the planet.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and I think in lockdown, you finally can feel, at least for me, like what is your own rhythm? Because rhythm for me is also connected to the feminine. So what is your rhythm? Not that feminine is not in man, just to say that clearly. The feminine is also in men and in women, and the masculine in women and men. But to follow your own rhythm, and not to have to be in a schedule. I don't have to bring my kid to school at 8:30. That gives me so much relief, and my body can really relax into, whatever, have sleep for a little while more than usually. So you're not so constrained all the time.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And I always found it so fascinating that in Italy, they literally have, I don't know if you know, they have this thing called siestas built into their everyday life. So like the shops will literally close. I forget like from what time to what time, but it's basically because everyone takes a midday nap. Like, I'm like, why don't we do that here? You know, it's such a beautiful like thing to build. I mean, it's like, hey, here's your self-care time, you know? Like, I think that that's fascinating. And I feel like that is something that we could adopt here in the States to again, infuse society with just a little more feminine energy.
Yeah, I think we need to not be damaged.
Yeah. Yeah.
I concur. And so I'm going to speak for the dads since you guys all rant. So it's also important for dads to be able to connect with their children and have that time to bond. It's extremely important, as we know as therapists, that the mom and the child bond. So the dad kind of is on the outside doing nothing. But I do remember those 3-6 months of driving my son around Miami because he would wake up in the middle of the night and not go back to sleep. And that's tough. And also watching mom go through her piece and the emotions that come up, you know, and the attachment stuff that happens. So I was curious, how does Ace deal
with you? It's interesting because with lockdown, we didn't really have to, that's not something we really had to face. But I will say, and the few times we did get a babysitter, like before lockdown, he was so little that like, I don't even think he really realized. But now that he's a little older, again, he just turned one, somewhat recently, I would say a few weeks ago, he does get upset like when I leave for work. And I think it's just because now he's processing like, oh, mommy's leaving, you know? And like, even if I get my jacket on and like get my backpack together, like he'll kind of like linger and follow me around. Like he can sense like I'm getting ready to leave. So, and then when I do leave, he'll like cry a little bit or whatever. So yeah, that's like something new actually that we're kind of like dealing with and experimenting with, because I feel like he's getting to the age where now he's perceptive enough to realize like, oh, mommy's leaving, you know?
So something else, I was wondering, we were talking in the beginning about your more like your spiritual message, maybe. Can you say something more about that? What is it that you've learned and what you want to share with the world?
You know, I've learned over the past few years that I think my purpose here is, I used to think like my purpose is to inspire people. And yes, I feel like that's still true to a certain degree. But I feel like I go about it in a different way now. I used to try and like tell people what to do and how to do it. And now I'm more like, figure it out for yourself, like open your heart, open your mind. The answers are within you. And I really feel like I just try to, be so real and so authentic that it naturally inspires people to be real and authentic too, because I feel like that's really the seed of anything we could ever want, is just to be free enough to be ourselves, you know? Another aspect that I try to, or element I try to bring to the table or encourage people to get curious about is, and I think I shared this quote with you, Haruna, is be who you needed when you were younger. And that's something that quote itself has really helped me and my spiritual journey. And that's something that I like to, incur, like I like to pay forward is if people are struggling or someone that I'm working with is feeling stuck, and to just like encourage them to like take a look back and maybe peel back some layers and see if you can get to the root cause of things. Because kind of like how we were saying earlier, I feel like that healing is really how you free yourself up to manifest all the things that you want to manifest, all of the feelings that you want to feel every day when you wake up. So yeah, be who you needed when you were younger, I feel like is probably my biggest quote and just like vibe that I like to send out into the world.
And what would that be then? What you needed?
I feel like I always needed someone to tell me that I was like enough as I was, you know, like I didn't have to always do everything right or do everything perfect or do everything a specific way. Like I'm enough as I am, and how I feel things is fine. And, you know, so it was almost just like more self-love, more self-respect, more self-appreciation of my body and my mind and just like how I went about the world naturally.
Yeah.
Would you recommend that everybody? Oh yeah,
I think failure is our best teacher, you know? And I feel like a lot of people stay small because they are afraid to fail, you know? And I always say, if you don't try, you'll never know. Worst case scenario, you fail. You know, but is it really the worst case scenario if you fail? Because then you learn something, you know? So I think everyone that has ever done anything great in the world has failed at some point. So I think fear of failure is a really common failure. Common fear that is groundbreaking if you can just get past it, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if that's a typical American way of doing things.
Maybe.
I mean, I'm not so, you know, I'm not so afraid of failure, I guess, but I don't think I would call it failure, you know?
Right.
I wouldn't call it failure.
Right.
So it would just be learning something like that.
Right. Yeah. Some type of lesson.
Yeah, I'm learning. So yeah. I'm trying, I'm learning, but failure then is not, it's such a hard way of seeing things.
Yeah. Well, because I feel like the word failure kind of implies that you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And like you said, you're not doing something wrong. Yeah. Like you're learning, you know.
You're learning. Mm. But I think that's a big fear. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think maybe, I'm not sure, but what I heard is that like the male wounding is more the fear of failure, and the feminine wound is more like not being loved.
Mm.
So I can relate more than to the not being loved than to the failure. I don't care.
Yeah.
I kind of see the fear of being seen in your power fear.
That sounds softer, I guess, and more connected to who I am.
I feel like some people fear their own power because they can sense the responsibility that then comes with that. And that can be scary, you know?
That's actually something that I'm going to talk about when I teach in a couple of weeks.
It's
good. It's good that it's on everybody's minds and it's in the template. It's a huge burden if you think about it, if you're in your full power. Say for someone who wanted to be a great healer, okay, and you set your intention to be this great healer, well, then what's the burden? What's the opposite of that? Or when you step into that, what's the expectation?
No, I know, but that's more like not my fear, but it's also happening that you become more weird in a way. more disconnected in a way of the normal ways of seeing things. You know, you get more outside of the regular field of people. So I think that there's something real about it, that you can become more alone or on your own feet, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, you feel more powerful and more connected at the mm-hmm. same time. Mm-hmm. But it is true that there are less people that understand you and that want to be, not maybe want to be around you, but want to, would think the same way you do. So you can feel really lonely in that mm-hmm. process of, mm-hmm. of becoming more of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, if you're like Michael Jackson, for example, okay, on top of the world, he can't go anywhere in his mind, maybe, except down. But then the demand of all of his fans mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. I have to be better each show. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have to be a better performer. The music mm. has to be better. So as a fitness person.
It's so interesting because when you were using that example, I was thinking about how I did go through a period of time in my teaching where I felt like I was putting this pressure on myself to make every class better than the last. And it's like, it was like, again, it was like this pressure of that like expectation. And I had to kind of take a step back and realize like every class is an experience and every experience is just going to be different. It's not necessarily better or worse. The energy is just different. And then when I started to view it that way, I was able to appreciate every class for the different, you know, energy that they gave me. And, you know, it's interesting because we have a Facebook group of all of us instructors and some of the new instructors will sometimes post like from other markets. Some of the newer instructors will post like, how do you deal with a class that gave you bad energy or something like that? And it's funny because I used to kind of think like that, you know, and now I'm just like, no, every energy, right? Every class is just different because there's different people every time. They're going through different things every time. So you're not always going to get a full room of people that are smiling ear to ear and had a great day. That's just the reality of it, you know? Like, so that for me was something that I had to kind of to just come to terms with and work through. And now it's beautiful because I just feel so much more present without this like looming expectation above me. And I'm just like, okay, here's where we're at. Like, let's see where this class will take us, you know? And it's just a very, it's more, it feels more authentic, you know?
Yeah. So it's becoming more human.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Less guru.
Yeah.
More human.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So as an empath, when you're feeling into somebody's energy, that's kind of draining.
Yeah. So there's a couple things that I'll do in the morning or in the moment rather. So like if I do feel like I'm in a conversation where maybe someone's just like kind of like emotionally dumping on me, I in my head will just like say over and over to myself, I am Allison. I am Allison, to just like remind my body that like whatever they're saying is not mine. I also like to just feel my feet plant like on the ground. So I'll actually picture like beams of light under my feet, grounding me to the earth again, just to like kind of remind my mind and my body that like, this is me, not that, you know, so that in that way I can be there for people, but not take on their stuff as like my own. But yeah. And then sometimes like I'll do before every class I teach, I will just do a visualization of like a white beam of light coming down through my head, going through my body, and then coming out the bottoms of my feet and just putting me in a protective bubble. That way, like any energies that are in the room, like just are not penetrating me in any way. And that way I can just stay really grounded in my own energy and just like emit my frequency without kind of like letting anything in that just doesn't belong to me. So lots of visualizations, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So or grounding, visual?
I Am Safe is always mantras, one of my go-tos. Just because I feel like before I knew what was happening, like when I would feel people's energies, it would make me very anxious, you know? And I wouldn't know why. I would just know like, okay, this isn't how like I feel, you know, like this isn't me. Why am I feeling like this? So one mantra that really helped just keep me grounded and calm and at just like at peace with whatever was happening is just like, I am safe.
Yeah. And I would say the best for me, the best way to keep energies out, not out, but is to embody. If you embody all the energies, existent energies, then mm-hmm. you don't have to be afraid of anything mm-hmm. and separate yourself from them.
Yeah.
So okay. I like to go deeper inside and build on like an intimate relationship with my own, if you want to say, negative feelings or energies.
Yeah.
And by embodying them, by being clear about them, you don't have to take them on from others.
Mm-hmm.
It just can go through you, or you can connect with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also being clear. Just if you are in a conversation that's draining all your energy, you can say, I leave.
Yeah.
Bye.
Gotta go.
Gotta go. Yeah. I gotta go.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have experiences like you have to be on all the time because people are coming in, they're paying their money for this 45 minutes, you know, they want you to be.
Yeah, I actually, that kind of was something else that I had to work through. And again, that was something that kind of like triggered my fear of being perfect, was like, I felt this need to, be on all the time, and that like, I had to be everything that everyone needed, you know, and that like was spreading me so thin, even just energetically, you know, like that's just so draining. So I almost just now like am just more like, here's who I am. Here's how I'm feeling. I hope whatever you're safe to share or bring whatever you're feeling, and let's just move through it together. Like, this is not me putting on a show for you. You know, I'm not going to act like I'm feeling a certain way just to, you know, it's like, again, it's just so much more authentic now. But yeah, to your point, like I did go through a period of time, and even like little things like that, I feel did contribute to my burnout, because that's draining, right? Like showing up to work every day, being like, oh my God, I have to make sure that I'm like on, you know, was like another thing that was definitely contributing to just like me just being drained all the time.
Do you think that American people even know that there's something else than being on all the time? And
I don't know. I know America, I feel like America runs on coffee.
Yeah, it's only adrenaline all the time.
I know.
You must be so drained as a nation.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not touching that one. I think that you're right. I think there's extremes though.
Yeah.
You're on all the
time. I mean, in the Netherlands, it's comparable to the Netherlands, but I mean, not in this extent. You know, I think when we compare it, there's the America maybe is more inauthentic and more, you know, and more drained and more on and everything. But we copy a lot from you. So I'm not too, you know, happy about that.
Yeah. I think that's really a good observation, because the surrounding areas are the islands, you know, people are more laid back. That's more my energy. I'm more laid back.
Yeah.
I get hype when I'm in a group and that feels good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm more laid back.
Mm-hmm.
I know things are going to move the way they move, and we're going to get through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Without dismissing it or going into a spiritual bypass.
Yeah.
the Netherlands. Yeah, I'm wondering if that comes from, you know, the fact that you guys live
probably
so long ago.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know a lot of people using pots, you know. I mean, it's also like circles of people who do that and others we don't touch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not in my circle necessarily.
But no, we have a lot of addiction here. There's so much that people are sensitive to.
Yep.
I think a lot of people are empaths. They just don't recognize it. They, you know, we take on our cultural.
Also, I feel like there is a lot of times like this element of like shame or like self-judgment that a lot of people can't handle. So yeah, they turn to substance to just kind of like shut it down, you know, or just mask it.
So how difficult is it to be authentic in America? I mean, for what I see, it looks more inauthentic.
I don't know. Like I feel like I'm a pretty authentic person. I feel like that's my easiest way to find my people to connect with is if I'm authentic and we vibe, then like, it's genuine, but if I'm authentic and someone doesn't vibe with me, then like it's nothing personal. It like it's vibrational, but like then I just know like, okay, like no connection here. Move on to the next. I feel like authenticity is at least for me personally, like just a powerful way to just know who and what's for you and who and what isn't, you know?
Yeah, I like that. It is vibrational.
Yeah.
Can you say something about that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like everything is energy, right? Everything is frequency. So, you know, if someone doesn't vibe with me or vice versa, it's not because I don't like them or they don't like me, but our frequency is just different, you know?
Yeah. So how do you know when people are within your frequency band?
I don't know. I feel like it's something that intuitively you just like feel like conversation is easy. You talk about things that genuinely like fill you both up, you know, like one person isn't drained after the conversation or whatever, like little things like that. I feel like intuitively, like I can just feel when the connection is authentic in that way.
Yeah,
I don't like an authentic conversation.
Yeah.
I don't put up with it.
No, me neither. It was the most difficult part of growing up. I think that you never are able to be in small talk.
And
you are silent. I was silent most of the time because there was not such a conversation possible.
Well, I think, so I'm going to answer your question about the mask, as I'll call it a mask, in the States.
I agree.
I think that the mask is kind of dissolving. And so the truth, you know, we'll call it the lower self so that you know our terms, Allison. The lower aspects or lower energy or lower emotions are starting to surface and people are starting to really see that. And that's more important because that leads us towards healing and connecting with the higher aspects. When we deny those places, like I'll use Star Wars. I'm a big Star Wars nerd. You know, the Jedi weren't allowed to feel the lower self, okay, the dark side. And those Jedi who did embrace the dark side were the most powerful. Well, when you bring it together, you're in harmony. So that's the yin and the yang. So we have each, and it's embracing those times when, hey, I don't have it right now. I don't feel like having a conversation with you. No, stop. Or I'm really pissed off or fuck you or whatever. I think that's important that we are authentic with that. And that leads to healing and deeper conversation. But when you're rejecting those mm-hmm. parts and it comes out sideways, yeah. that leads to pain and wounding and trauma. I think Europeans have us a little bit
beat. I don't know. I saw a while ago, I saw a fragment of a conversation between Trump and our prime minister. It was really funny. Our prime minister was so direct, you know, he just say things like, no, we're not. No, we're not. And Trump is like in shock. How come you just say this, you know, be so direct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Brits are famous for being so direct. So even in Europe, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
The people in Belgium don't like us because of our directness.
Yeah, I can appreciate that though. I'd rather someone be direct with me than have someone talk in circles. And I'm like, wait, what is happening? Like, what is trying to be said, you know? So I can appreciate someone that's just like direct.
Yeah. And I know it from a friend of mine also who moved to the States. And there she was working in a company for advertisement, something like that. And people were really shocked about her, you know. Her way of saying things.
Yeah.
Naming. I mean, it's only naming. It's not being impolite, but it's only being very clear and naming the things that are happening. And people were in shock, yeah. And they liked it, of course. They liked it. Yeah.
So that's what my clients like about me is that I'm direct. I don't sugarcoat it because, you know, I believe that every person really wants to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you play games with them, they're not getting anywhere. But my clients come to me and they say, I like your directness.
Like you said, if you sugarcoat, then you're going to just, feeds into the bypassing. You know what I mean? And then it's just like, what are we even doing here? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
This has been great.
So, wow, this has been fun.
No, I think this has been such a juicy conversation. Like I said, I am just excited to go back to work tomorrow. I'm literally counting down the hours, but I can appreciate this quarantine time that I've had. I've just been able to kind of catch my breath and do some reading and some self-care. So it's been a nice little break. I'm grateful that I didn't have the worst case of COVID and that I got through it pretty quickly. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm excited to get back into my routine, my flow, and see some humans.
I always
I came up with that so long ago. Santini Strong. I don't know why. It started as just a hashtag that I was using on Instagram to just kind of I guess build community, right, with my classes and stuff like that. But it's come to embody so much more than what you would normally think of when you hear the word strong, you know. It's more, you know, resilience or being able to face yourself and go through challenges. It means so much more than when I first started the hashtag. So I kept it. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's what I kind of thought is overcoming challenges, being resilient. Yeah, cool.
I do not have anything to add here.
I think we had very great conversation.
Yeah, want to thank you for your presence here and sharing your wisdom with us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. Yeah, whenever.
Absolutely. And you can come back. Yeah, just let us know. Cool. Oh, the next conversation is going to be deeper because we talk about everything, sexuality, sensuality, all that. So she'll embarrass the hell out of me.
Thank you.
Cool.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Yay!